Are you there?
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, yes, good afternoon. It is Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time in the wonderful United States of America, and my name is Fail Delica, the host of Finding Your Hidden Treasure. Today is March 27, 2015, and I'm delighted to have our special guest, Mrs. Yvette Pegues, who will be our guest speaker as we close off the month of March as we are celebrating Women's History Month. Hi, how are you, Mrs. Pegues?
Just amazing. How are you?
Oh, we're so delighted to have you on the show. As Mrs. Yvette Pegues has a master's in education, she's originally from Miami, Florida, and currently residing in Atlanta, Georgia, with her family. She is a wife, she's a mom, but most of all, she is an unthinkable woman. And the reason why we consider her an unthinkable woman, because this woman has so much strength. As she has been an advocate for disability, she has been an advocate for the U.S. Department of Education. She's been an advocate on various platforms, such as standing on the behalf of crisis situations as a number one responder. So we're excited to have her, as she's well-educated. Not only that, but she has a passion to serve people. And unfortunately, many years ago, she had a surgical intervention that unfortunately has changed her life forever. But what I admired most about this woman is that as she is the Mrs. Wheelchair USA 2014-2015, she's using that platform to be an advocate for disability and really helping to changing the face of disability. Disability is no longer a crutch, is no longer something that we can use, our people with disabilities can use as an excuse, but now it's an opportunity, as it's a platform that many people with disability can use in order to change the lives of others. So we are so delighted to have you on the show. Once again, welcome, welcome, welcome. So how are you doing today? All is well?
All is amazing, and thank you for having me today. I'm really excited.
Well, we are delighted to have you. And really, we want to just get the conversation started with, tell us about your life growing up. What is it that you wanted to do with your life? What was that, when I grow up, I want to be what, question and answer for you?
That's actually a really great question, because as a young girl, having only one other sibling who happened to be a brother who was much older than me, I just wanted to be like him. I just thought he was amazing. I wanted to be athletic. I played just about every sport. So I didn't have a formal idea of what I wanted to be when I grew up, but I loved school. I just loved education. I loved going to school. I loved learning. It just really was a way to take me to other places without physically moving my body, but instead moving my mind and my ideas and my imagination.
Wow. Now, growing up, so you were the youngest of two. And
yeah.
How was it as far as your idea of the career path? You were reflecting to be like your brother, as he was very athletic, but yourself, what was that career path that you wanted to be when you were growing up?
Well, what I think happened was, at some point in my life, I was affected by a movie that some may remember called A Beautiful Mind.
Mm-hmm.
That movie to me was just so impactful, how he could, in his current position and not even identified disability at the time. Ironically, the fact that he was able to grab a suitcase, wear a suit, walk into NASA or any other organization and just look at the problem, and just by looking at it, and obviously his giftedness, was able to just solve that problem. I don't know what it was about that movie, but I do remember sitting in a circle with a few of my friends in Miami. We were right at the tip of maybe going into college or going into a career, and I said, that's what I want to be when I grow up.
Wow, and so life, so you went off to school. What did you study, and what was the reason why you decided to pick the majors that you did in your educational track?
That's a great question, Fayola. You're good at this. This is what happened, right? So I grew up Catholic, and that faith made a huge impact on me. And so my early years were at a private Catholic university, and that really ties into my choice once I graduated from high school, because I had several scholarships available to me, and I graduated relatively early at the age of 16. But
wow.
Because my mother was raising us by herself starting at the age of 11, her choice for me was to get a job. She needed the funds, she needed the support, And because neither one of my parents could read or write, they did not have the same love for education. I actually taught myself how to read with a dictionary in front of the TV. So I was upset because there just seemed to be so many opportunities for me for education, which was my passion. But she said, get a job, and did not sign off because at 16 at that time, I did not have the ability to make my own choice. So what I did, unfortunately, was I actually had three jobs, and I went to several different schools. So I went to a technical school, and I went to Miami-Dade, which is a community college. And shortly after joining, I was able to get in honor classes and honor societies and debate and get scholarships. So I pretty much paid my way through the first 2 years. But going back to Catholicism, there was a school that I used to ride my bike around when I was in elementary school, my first public elementary school. And the name of that university was Barry University, which is a private Catholic university and a very expensive tuition. So I ended up taking a networking and system engineering course. And so I was graduating with a degree in engineering with a minor in Microsoft certification. So I had the great opportunity to be noticed by International Business Machines, which was kind of the Apple of that day. So IBM is still, you know, an amazing company, but it's 100 years old. And IBM drafted me as an engineer. And the simple explanation of a networking and systems engineer is pre-cloud. We were able to make large PCs and computer systems talk along long distances. So that's today's cloud. And we were kind of the inventors and the pilgrims, if you will, of the cloud movement. So engineering was really something I was interested in just because I liked breaking things and putting them back together. But deep in my heart, I thought I would be an attorney.
Wow.
So then how long were you with IBM?
Very good question. When they moved me to Atlanta, it must have been back in 2003. I was with them for 10 years before my traumatic brain injury. Mm. And the beauty of working for IBM, especially right out of college, is that I traveled the world, Egypt, Asia, Bratislava, obviously the 50 states. So my job as an engineer at IBM was dynamic in that we had clients. So it was almost like being self-employed with a major corporate covering. So, you know, like, I don't know, a Florida Lottery or a Home Depot or any or all of the 500 top companies would call IBM and they request a solution and they deliver a team. And I was part of that team on the engineering side. But as my career advanced, so did I. I got to have project and program management responsibilities, using my technical insight to lead large organizations and groups. And just before my injury, I was promoted to a worldwide delivery manager responsible for Canada and Asia.
But before we get to the point in your life where it really turned your perspective and life situation, we also believe that even though it's Women's History Month, we do respect the women of the past. And, of course, my focus is, you know, as we always tend to wait until people pass to really celebrate them, to show them value and appreciation, we also look to celebrate women of the present and future. And that's, of course, you are one of our women of the present, and not knowing who you will impact to also celebrate the women of the future. So for you, who were some of the women in your life growing up? Why is it that engineering, you fell into that career path? Did you have women engineers that were role models for you, or were there any other female figures in your life that kind of helped you to be who you are?
Ironically, no. I definitely followed Maya Angelou and a lot of strong African-American women, but men as well, because as I mentioned earlier, I was such a tomboy. I just found myself always surrounded by male-dominated positions and interests. So I had a lot of inquiry about just technology and why things work the way they work. So I'm thinking as I got older, I started to respect and understand the impact that Black women made outside of the household. But for the most part, the strength within the home, you know, and having a Proverbs woman to be able to make and do and respect and just be kind of the heart of the home was where I found strength. But where I wanted to find a career just happened to be where I was surrounded by men, almost to the point where there were sites and customer locations where we had to go into a data center where there was just a computer room and there were no bathrooms for women. It was just men's bathrooms. So I was very highly influenced by men and male-dominated conditions, whether it be athletics or just work. But some of the women, obviously, Oprah's and Maya's and just the amazing women that I now can look back and see parts of myself being molded after are really important to me.
And then in the future, there will be many young women who will say the same as they reflect back on you and your life and your advocacy for disability. So please share with the audience the day that your life really took a different turn.
Wow. Well, that day was obviously unexpected. Well, the physicality of it was really just totally having my right side go numb. And I'll circle back just to say that in 2010, I had the great opportunity of going on a disaster mission trip to Haiti after the earthquake. So I went with the first medical team, I think less than a week after the earthquake. I didn't have any medical training, but I did want to help. My heart was so heavy, and I had the opportunity. I was called by my church to attend, and I had the blessing of knowing five languages and being able to help the medical team to translate from the Dominican Republic and to really support those victims of the earthquake. And we returned a few times as well to help at an orphanage. And so immediately after that, you know, although I was still actively and gainfully employed at IBM, I had also returned to school to get a second degree in early childhood education. It was not my intention. Honestly, I was very much a cognitive scientific thinker. But because I didn't have a very comfortable childhood to model my now parenting after, I felt now with this new little baby boy, I needed more. I'd already kept him home for 18 months. I knew I had to let go. I just didn't know how to. So I just asked a few questions at the local university, and they probably got tired of me, recommended I stay for a certification. And 2 years later, I ended up with another degree, and it really did change and help my parenting skills, and I'm so grateful for that. But immediately after graduating, because I had such high scores, you know, I received the opportunity to apply to a doctorate program at Harvard, and it was an education leadership position, which I thought I'd do really well at, only because it was meant to change policy from the top down, and it had a law component. So it was the School of Education, the School of Law, and the School of Business coming together for a once-in-a-lifetime, Bill Gates-funded opportunity. So immediately after I returned back from Haiti, I continued to move forward with what I thought would be the second part of my life, living in another state and getting my doctorate. And 6 weeks before that happened, my entire right side went numb, and we got rushed to the emergency room. And first they thought it was MS. Then they thought it could have possibly been a stroke, but they thought maybe she's too young. And fortunately, there was a neurological ER physician who said, you know, let's just try giving her an MRI. And they said to me, you know, don't freak out. And of course, you know, what did I do?
Freak out.
Freaked out, right? And they said, well, what we found is that your brain tonsils, which are the nerves, the two nerves that run down the back of your head, actually are clogging or intrusive in your spinal column. So to be perfectly blunt, my brain fell into my spinal column. And as a result, the fluid in my brain, the cerebral fluid, CSF fluid, was trapped in a room, and it would have gotten out by any means necessary. So they were concerned that the pressure in my head would break through my skull, and they suggested brain surgery.
Hello?
I'm here.
Okay.
It's a lot. It's a lot to
deal
with.
Yeah, it is.
It's
Take
okay.
your time, please.
And
because,
you
know, your strength in your story. And even before we got on the show today, we talked about, you know, God's divine plan. you know, we may not always agree with it, we may not always see it, but, you know, in his word, he promised your latter days shall be greater than your former days. And he said that I always have the perfect plan for you, plans for your, for you to prosper, plans to give you character and hope. And, you know, and that's in Jeremiah 29:11. And it's just one of those things that we don't understand God. His, he said his ways are not our ways, his thoughts are not our thoughts, his understanding is not our understanding. But he says in Proverbs 3:5-6, trust in him and lean not into thy own understanding, but acknowledge him in all your ways, and he shall direct your path.
I agree with you, and thank you so much for that. Isaiah 50:15 was my life verse, and it really got me through some very difficult times, because once the brain injury had materialized and the physicians, several that I saw after the initial impact, they pretty much told me that I no longer had executive function. And I didn't really understand what that was, and I tried to ignore it. And I said, well, okay, so fine, I'm in a wheelchair, I have a physical disability, why can't I go back to work? And they said, well, that the left side of your brain is broken. Those scientific and cognitive and just mathematical, conceptual, skill sets are gone, you know, and you cannot go back into a high-level, high-stress, high-functioning environment. And I realize now, 3 years later, that I lost the ability to function, and that loss occurred on the left side of my brain, but I never mourned the loss. I did everything to get around it, but nothing to allow myself to get into it, to recognize it. And so while I didn't accept the prognosis, the diagnosis definitely needed taken seriously. So I got a lot of physical therapy, but there was no one who could truly give me cognitive recovery skills back. So fortunately, I went back to all the patents I wrote and all the technology books that I prepared for IBM, and I said, I have done this before, and I know that God is the source of my supply, and He gives me my IQ, He gives me my intelligence, and I've got to get it back. And I prayed about it, and I was able to just exercise some things to allow me to stay open. And my husband's also in IT, so we had the blessing of him being able to come home and work remotely, and he would come in, and I was his water cooler friend, and he'd talk about what he was doing at work. So a combination of those things really helped me to just massage my left brain. But what I did learn to do, which I'm so grateful to God for, is I used 80% of my gift and only 20% of my talent. I flipped exactly what I wasn't doing before, because I realized long after I was, educated and I got to a position where I leaned so much on my education, that God put a gift in the womb with me at birth, and it was a present that I never chose to open until I had to. And when I did, I recognized that I'm bigger than my academia, I'm bigger than my education. I have a gift that was given to me, a gift that completes me and creates me. And so that's my talent, and that is how I've been able to function, really, because my right brain is more my teacher brain, and going back to school to become an educator for my children actually saved my life, because now I can lean on my right brain. It's almost like losing a limb or losing your sight. You get a seventh sense, and that seventh sense was being able to use my emotional quotient. And so people always look at your IQ and say, oh, well, you're a 160 or 150, and they measure you by that. But what I recognize that was your emotional quotient is also a scientific measurement and a blessing. And it's what makes you social, what makes you likable, and it can't be taught. And I was able to grow that area of my life and my brain and just educate my children through my pain and through our tragedy. And as a result, they ended up, writing and publishing their own book, and that helped them with bullying, and it helped them with understanding. And because they were such caring people, they wanted to help others, and they felt like a book for children by children would be able to help other children who I confirmed may be living in a similar household where disability has taken over.
Wow. Now, how your husband is very supportive. Now, talk about that relationship. How did it affect you as husband or wife now that there was I don't want to say a burden, but there was a change in the dynamic of your household.
Absolutely. And I'm happy to talk about that because obviously a lot of people see me in a wheelchair. They don't recognize that I also have invisible disabilities. And they say, well, you know, you're so lucky that your husband's still around. Most men would have run. Mm-hmm. And what I learned and I share with most women, and prayerfully it affects their marriage in a positive way. But I tell them, you know, my biggest disability was actually the first 2 years of my marriage when I didn't understand my husband's role as a man and head of our household. And that was my most difficult challenge because I walked into the relationship assuming that I wore pants and I can do whatever he can do, and I was making a lot of money and I was really smart and, you know, the traditional woman.
Yeah.
Right. And so we went back and forth about that. My husband is he's quiet. He's like the opposite of me, basically. He is, but he is so amazing. He's 10 foot tall, you know, and he's just so in love with Christ, and he brought me into a place in my relationship with Christ that could have never been achieved without him. And the day that I took off the virtual pants and allowed him to be the head of the household is what is blessing us today, because God knew 6 years later that I would have a traumatic brain injury. And had I emasculated my husband, had I treated him like the child instead of the head, then yes, they would be right. He would need to run because I could no longer offer him the mothering that some women, you know, provide their husbands when what they really need to do is submit. And I was so happy and excited to submit to him completely because I realized that in submitting to him, I was submitting to God's plan for marriage. And it didn't make me smaller. It made me better. So when I had the traumatic brain injury, my husband's like, this is like having a cold. I've always taken care of you. I've always been there for you. We're going to get through this. And I didn't have to worry about how he would respond because he was already the head. He already made the decisions. He already took care of me. And this was a different type of care, but he just really handled it beautifully. And it's so difficult for him, but he never complains. He never gets an attitude. He's always singing praises. And those 6 o'clock in the morning songs used to drive me crazy early in our relationship. But now I hear him and my two small sons singing God's praises every morning. And I'm in tears because I'm so blessed and excited about it. But yes, he is absolutely amazing. And we've become stronger as a result of it because I'm seeing pieces and parts of him that would have not, you know, come out outside of a tragic situation. And he, me, you know, and that man is the father of our children who have become so amazing, so caring, so empathetic. They fight over who's going to help and push mommy in the wheelchair. They open doors. They push elevator buttons. And I pray that, you know, we're already praying for their wives, but I pray that this makes them better husbands in another 20 or 30 years, whatever God chooses, or a servant of his. But I'm just so, so grateful.
Wow. That's a testimony. And as you say that, how did it affect your self-image, your portrayal as a woman? You know, how did that affect your body image, your body perception? Because, you know, there has to be a psychological adaptation to a situation like that. So how did, I know you said you had the physical rehabilitation, but you didn't really have the mental or emotional, but thank God the spirituality came in and kind of helped you along that journey. But how did it affect you as your perception of you? When you looked in the mirror, how did you cope knowing that you weren't able to walk again, or you won't be able to run with your sons or do those physical things that you were used to doing before?
Yeah, that's a good one. Atlanta Parent Magazine called me and asked me to help them with an article about parenting with a disability. And that's really where I feel like we as a country should recognize that unless you believe yourself to be perfect, we all have limitations that can at some point either create or expose a disability. And I really like to share with people that an accident, an injury, or an illness, and maybe even aging at some point or another will put you in the minority of disabled. And it's a fast-growing minority that I did not have access to prior to my brain injury, I had no idea what the Americans with Disabilities Act was. But I will tell you that being confined to a chair felt like being in jail. I felt like my legs being taken away was my identity being taken away, because I was so physically active and I had two small children to parent. And I really honestly felt I was embarrassed to be in photos or even in public in my wheelchair. So I only left to go to doctor's appointments until I really do believe the Holy Spirit reminded me, that's not how I created you to be. I was in complete and total denial. I was in an older wheelchair that hurt me physically. And he was clear to me, until you accept where you are today, tomorrow will never come. So I moved into my wheelchair. The wheelchair was blue. It was fancy. My boys loved it. And I realized that this wheelchair is now part of my body, but I didn't have to change as a person. So I still wear 6 to 8 inch heels because I don't have to walk or stand in them. And I find my silver linings and I look for opportunities because I'm still a married woman. I still need to look nice and I still get my hair done, you know, and I still, you know, try to have the appearance of just pride, because what I get to understand and what I believe the mission is for me now is to change the image of disability, the physical image, the perception of disability. So when people come to me and they say, well, there's no one in my family who's disabled, we really haven't had any experience with disability, so the things you have to say don't affect me. And my response to them is, I respectfully understand where you're coming from, but that's where I was 3 years ago. You cannot plan your future, but I do recognize that I just am differently abled. And so the beauty of that is, just as the quote states, necessity is the mother of invention, being differently able embodies all of that, because the simple things that I've done before my disability have to be done completely different, but the outcome is the same. And it grows me, because now my imagination and my kids get to get involved and we make things work. And I think that as people recognize how innovative that is and how innovative we have to be as we, you know, have to live our lives with a disability, the respect will be initiated, because most people's perception of people with disabilities is that they're dumb, they're stupid, they're helpless, they're worthless, and it hurts me to admit that, but I've been in that situation before, and so I really do want people to recognize that disability is an amazing and courageous community of people who have been thrown away, you know, in society, but we've still risen from the ashes like a phantom with a purpose.
Wow. That is powerful. And as I'm recalling, you were the Toyota spokesperson for their disability car?
Yes, Toyota did approach me, but the wonderful opportunity is that today I'm actually being sponsored by a vehicle by the name of MV1, Michael, Victor, and the number one. This particular automotive company has built a vehicle specifically for people with disabilities on the factory. So it's amazing. And they've been sponsoring me as the automobile sponsor. And I believe in what they do. And I have gotten so many great opportunities, because whereas disability was the reason why I couldn't go back to work, it now becomes a favorable skill set to put me back into an active environment. So
And then you're also the first African-American woman for the Miss Wheelchair USA.
Yes, and I love Miss Wheelchair USA, because the difference between Miss Wheelchair USA and most other beauty pageants is that it has nothing to do with beauty. In fact, it has to do with community service. So I'm the first Black African-American to wear the national crown for Miss Wheelchair USA, and the first time the crown has ever been in the state of Georgia. And having been the first high school and college graduate, I'm excited to share that with everyone.
And you were just recently at the Georgia Capitol.
Yes, the governor gave me a commendation for all of the advocacy and work that I've been doing in the disability community. And I'm also transforming women entrepreneurs, Woman of the Year.
Wow. I am just excited how God is using something that someone would say is something to hinder you has actually been the key to your greatness. And as we close the show, is there in 10 seconds, what is the best advice you would give to women of the past, present, and future?
Your strength lives long after you're gone, and you create legacy today. So don't give up on yourself or your kids. Look in the mirror and recognize who you are, what you are, what you bring to the world. And women are a powerful breed, and submitting is not a reflection of weakness, because Jesus submits daily. And love yourself and express that love to others every single day.
Wow, I have a tear in my eye. I don't know if it's something that blew in my eye or if I'm actually tearing, but... Well, Mrs. Pegues, we are just delighted. May God continue to shine his face on you and your family. And may it be an opportunity that you will be able to gird up those who have disabilities, whether they're visible or invisible, that you are a woman of strength, and let your strength carry on. So women of the future can say, it was Mrs. Yvette Pegues that reminded me of who I am, regardless of how physically I look or even how I feel about myself. So we wish you all the best in all that you do, and you're always welcome back on the Finding Your Hidden Treasure show. My name is Faye Odelika, the host of Finding Your Hidden Treasure, every Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time in the wonderful United States of America. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.